on 100.1 FM. You are listening to KMXT Kodiak. It is your public radio station. Stay tuned for news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. New information's emerging about the mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas yesterday that claimed the lives of 19 children and two faculty members at an elementary school. NPR's Ashley Lopez has the latest.
Governor Greg Abbott said that in addition to the 21 people who were killed, 17 people were injured in the shooting. According to Abbott, earlier in the day, the 18-year-old gunman shot his grandmother in the face and then she contacted police. He says the shooter barricaded himself in a classroom that was connected to another classroom. Law enforcement says this is where most of the killings took place. Abbott says officials have learned more about the gunman since yesterday.
He may have had a juvenile record, but that is yet to be determined. There was no known mental health history.
Abbott says the gunman, who was a high school dropout, used an AR-15 in the shooting, which he purchased in March. Abbott also says there was no meaningful forewarning of the crime, except for social media posts half an hour before he began shooting. Ashley Lopez, NPR News, Uvalde.
Heckling erupted during Abbott's news conference as Beto O'Rourke, the Democratic candidate seeking to unseat Governor Abbott, walked to the stage and accused him and other Republicans of doing nothing to prevent mass shootings in America's schools. Emotions flared around the politics of the debate around gun control as Abbott spoke at length about the need to address mental health problems around gun violence. Critics want stronger gun control measures. The National Rifle Association is scheduled to hold its gathering in Houston on Friday. One thing everyone could agree on, the community is grieving. NPR's John Burnett has more.
A local insurance agent with tears streaming down his cheeks told me people move to Uvalde to get away from big city problems. They just can't fathom that this carnage happened in their little town, where the most excitement up to this point has been Border Patrol chases.
That's NPR's John Burnett reporting. In other news, congressional forecasters think the federal government will run a $1 trillion deficit this year. NPR's Scott Horsley reports that's down from nearly $3 trillion worth of red ink in 2021.
Budget forecasters think the U.S. economy will grow just over 3% this year, with somewhat slower growth in the years to come. Both inflation and interest rates are expected to be higher than forecasters were predicting last summer. Tax revenues as a share of the economy are the strongest they've been in two decades, but that's expected to decline in the years to come. On the other hand, government spending as a share of the economy is expected to increase, thanks to costs associated with an aging population and higher interest payments on the government's debt. Congressional forecasters think deficits will average about $1.6 trillion a year over the next decade. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes up nearly 200 points, or more than 0.5%. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A nationwide shortage of baby formula has left parents scrambling. In Alaska, parents say the formula was already hard to come by, especially in rural communities. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas spoke with one Homer parent struggling to find formula and an Anchorage pediatrician who is helping patients adapt.
In January, Lottie Connolly got a call from her babysitter. They were out of formula, and her 10-month-old baby girl, Sloane, was hungry. On her way home from work, Connolly stopped by her local grocery store in Homer. She was looking for the formula she knows Sloane likes most, Enfamil Inspire.
They did not have her kind in, so I bought same brand, just different, and she would not drink it.
So she got in her car and started driving to Soldotna, about an hour and a half north of Homer. She checked Fred Meyer, Walgreens, and Walmart, and had no luck.
So I panicked, obviously, because there was no food on the peninsula, and I had to drive all the way to Anchorage at this point, 10 o'clock at night, to see if I could find her formula. And when I got up there, I went to every grocery store, Target, everywhere I could, and bought a couple from each store.
She bought 6 containers on that first trip to Anchorage. That was enough to feed Sloane for about a month. Since then, she's been driving up to Anchorage twice a month in search of formula. Connolly isn't alone. In one Anchorage-based Facebook group, dozens of shoppers share photos of store shelves so others can see where baby formula is in stock. A formula exchange page created by a mother in Kodiak now has more than 15,000 members. Another page, called Human Milk for Human Babies Alaska, has nearly 2,000 members, a mix of donors and moms looking for milk. Parents across the state and country have been facing an infant formula shortage since February, when the country's largest formula manufacturer, Abbott, recalled products made at its plant in Michigan after four children became sick with bacterial infections.
Last week, maybe a week and a half ago, was really when the shortage seemed to hit the shelves in Alaska.
Dr. Monique Child says her patients are having to adapt. She's an outpatient pediatrician in Anchorage, and she's been giving away formula samples that manufacturers send to her office.
I started to have moms that were, I would say, calling somewhat desperately, afraid that they couldn't find formula for their babies.
She's worked with moms and babies to figure out what kinds of changes they can tolerate. One option for older babies is to try out a new type of formula.
But it's just like you or me. If we suddenly changed the bulk of our diet, our GI system takes a moment to get caught up to that difference.
Child says it's important to work closely with a pediatrician during a formula switch to ensure that it's happening safely. Younger babies don't have as many options.
I worry about those babies kind of in the middle. For whatever reason, we stopped breastfeeding at birth. We're now 6 months old. We're not close enough to a year old to really switch to cow's milk. We're pretty established on formula.
A woman might not breastfeed for a variety of reasons. Mothers of premature babies often rely on milk donations at the hospital. But Child says only about 10% of mothers produce enough milk to donate extra. When Connolly couldn't produce enough milk to feed Sloan shortly after her birth, a friend gave her extra breast milk. Connolly says there's been pressure, especially online, for other moms to do the same thing during the formula shortage.
People are just like, well, why don't you just donate breast milk? They don't have to do that. They really don't. It's really out of the kindness of their hearts that moms even do that.
Connolly tries to help out fellow moms when she can. In one local Facebook group, Homer residents ask if anyone in town needs something picked up in Anchorage. Next month, Connolly plans to drive to Anchorage and pick up formula for other parents. Between gas prices and hotel room costs, she knows not all families can afford the trip.
It's a big community thing. You know, if we're already going, we're going to try to help.
National efforts to alleviate the shortage are underway. Abbott's CEO says it could reopen its Michigan plant in the first week of June. Last week, President Biden invoked the Defense Production Act and required suppliers to prioritize getting baby formula ingredients to manufacturers. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski co-sponsored the Access to Baby Formula Act, and over the weekend, a shipment of formula arrived in the U.S. from Germany. Connolly recently ordered formula from a company based in Holland. In the meantime, she and other moms are keeping an eye out on Facebook and helping each other out when they can. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
The U.S. EPA is proposing protection for the Bristol Bay watershed that would permanently ban the Pebble Mine. The Environmental Protection Agency announced the proposed ban yesterday morning using its authority under a section of the Clean Water Act called 404C. It's what fishermen and tribes in the Bristol Bay region have requested for years. Kukyug Tribal Chief Tom Tilden was part of a delegation that visited Congress this month to press for the EPA to veto the mine.
Where that mine is the spawning beds of the greatest salmon-producing rivers in the world.
The company pressing to build the open-pit gold and copper mine, Pebble Limited Partnership, has said it would enrich the region with good salaries and other income. It had repeatedly argued that its state-of-the-art mine design would have no significant effect on Bristol Bay's fish run. But the EPA's new Region 10 Administrator, Casey Sixkiller, says two decades of scientific study show that the mine would cause permanent damage to the ecosystem that supports fishing cultures. As an example, the EPA notes that the mine plan calls for destroying 8 miles of fish streams. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had already rejected Pebble's permit application to dredge and fill in the area. Pebble is appealing that decision. The EPA's proposal is broader. If made final, it would ban any dredging or filling of federal waters and wetlands in service of mining the Pebble deposit. It's essentially the veto the Obama administration proposed in 2014, but that was called a preemptive veto because it came before the Pebble Partnership had submitted its mine plan. The EPA's proposed ban will be published in the Federal Register this week and will be the subject of public hearings next month. The agency will accept written comments through July 5th. Haines Formline artist James Hart will apprentice with several master Linkit and Haida artists beginning this summer. After about 4 years of developing Northwest Coast formline design and painting techniques, the young artist says he's excited to take his skills to the next level in glass and carving. KHNS's Corinne Smith has this report.
James Hart sits in his studio overlooking Main Street in Haines, bathed in afternoon spring sunlight and a sweeping view of Mount Rapinski. Northwest Coast formline paintings and paddles hang on the walls, and a splitboard leans against one wall, all painted by his brother, cousin, and Hart himself.
My name is James Grucich Hart, and I'm an artist.
He puts the finishing touches on a new formline painting, outlining a bold black design highlighted by red forms and a yellow background. He began focusing on Northwest Coast formline art just a few years ago.
It's been a very long road from the start, which was a paddle making class with Wayne Price here in Haines at the wood shop at the school. And from there, was able to apprentice with him on 2 40-foot dugouts and kind of wasn't sure if that was the direction that I wanted to keep going, but it just kept calling me back.
From there, he began taking formline design classes with Tsimshian artist David Robert Boxley of Metlakatla. Then the COVID pandemic hit.
I spent a lot of time just working on designs. My design work has gotten a lot better, and I felt like I was in a place where I'm comfortable designing, and now I want to start learning how to carve these designs.
Up next is something totally new for Hart, working in glass. He was selected to attend a workshop at the Pilchuck Glass School in Washington State, working with renowned Tlingit glass artist Preston Singletary and master carver Joe David.
We're going to be blowing glass and then sandblasting our designs onto these different pieces, so super excited.
Then Hart will apprentice with revered master Haida artist Robert Davidson.
If you're unfamiliar with Robert Davidson, he's your favorite Northwest Coast artist, favorite artist.
Davidson is a pivotal figure in the Northwest Coast art renaissance starting in 1969 and is an internationally known carver of totem poles and masks, printmaker, painter, and jeweler. Hart approached Davidson last winter and they discussed his work and agreed Hart would apprentice with him at his British Columbia studio for the next few years.
I'll be honest, I like got done, I like jumped around and fist pumped a few times and then probably cried a little bit too. So it's like all the emotions wrapped up in one. It's like an extremely difficult art form to kind of learn and start getting good at, and to kind of quietly be working by myself up to the point where I'm getting an opportunity to work with one of the best. It's like, I don't know, I feel extremely fortunate.
Hart tears up a bit and grabs a paintbrush again.
He does a lot for Haida Gwaii and Haida people. He's also a little bit Tlingit, so that's also fun to put in. But he holds his culture extremely highly, and it seems like that's been his driving force, is the culture. And to be able to kind of learn from somebody and learn how to create a career that's culturally based is really what I'm looking for.
Community members may know Hart from a number of leadership roles in Haines. He's the president of the Chilkoot Indian Association and involved in tribal and regional public affairs. He's also coach Hart to young basketball players at Haines High or Little League players during the summer. Hart says he plans to travel back and forth between Haines and BC and continue participating in those areas, particularly mentoring and sharing traditional arts with youth. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
Living on an island can be isolating in a number of ways, but as KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, one Wrangell teacher has found ways to expand her classroom all over the world through video tech.
A fifth grader with a swoop of dark hair over one eye stands on the pebbly beach at Wrangell City Park, looking into the camera.
Hi, my name is Madeline, reporting from Wrangell, Alaska. In Wrangell, we have about 2,000 people. There's two flights every day out of Wrangell. There's one elementary school, one middle school, and one high school. There's only one fifth grade teacher, and I'm stuck with her.
Madeline's mom, Laura Davies, the fifth grade teacher in question, who's standing behind the camera, laughs. Davies now teaches sixth grade, but she's still using technology to give her students public speaking experience, help them teach the world about Wrangell, and teach Wrangell students about the world. Madeline's video was part of a project where students made videos about Wrangell culture that Laura Davies says she could then share with other teachers around the U.S. or the globe on a video sharing app called Flipgrid. Here's another example from then fifth grader Jackson Carney talking about iconic ruby red gemstones sold by Wrangell children to island visitors.
In Wrangell, the kids have a very unique way of making money. They sell garnets. These garnets are found up the Stikine River at Garnet Ledge, a cabin dedicated to the kids of Wrangell by the Boy Scouts.
Davies learned of Flipgrid about 5 years ago, but says it became a staple in her classroom in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. Even when Wrangell students went back to in-person classes, Davies says she kept using Flipgrid. Then, in the spring of last year, Davies says she saw on Twitter that an educator in South Korea was looking to connect with classes around the world.
So I got a hold of them and said, yeah, we'd be able to collaborate.
Davies says at first she just expected that her class would watch the videos from South Korean students and give feedback. The students who live in mega city Seoul had written poems about their COVID experience and set them to music.
And we watched every single video and my students just lit up. I just felt like suddenly they were like, wow, someone on the other side of the world gets us. We also don't like COVID. Like, can we make videos?
Wrangell students responded with their own poems, but Davies says the experience was more than just sharing words. She says the poems from the South Korean students had a recurring theme of feeling like they were in jail because of COVID restrictions.
So we started talking to them about, like, what are our freedoms in Wrangell? We're still able to do all of these things. We're still at school. And what are a lot of places around the rest of the world? Like, what are they not able to do? And so we had these discussions, but then there was this commonality of, like, nobody likes COVID.
Before discovering Flipgrid, Davies says she used to do what she called mystery Skype with her classes, where the class would video call with another classroom around the world and try and guess where the other kids lived and learn about their lives. That process started with her sister, who is an au pair in Switzerland. Davies says that interactive video tech like Skype or Flipgrid help make the globe accessible to kids from a little island.
And so one of the ideas for me is to expand, like, hey, Wrangell, you can go to school and do whatever you want and have these cool careers, and you can maybe live outside of Wrangell, or you can get these skills and bring them back to Wrangell and work from here. So I'm trying to give them ideas on, like, what's outside of Wrangell, not to say that they never come back, but what's out there for them to learn.
And it allows Wrangell students to share unique aspects of Alaska Island living.
My students love to talk about hunting and trapping and all of these subsistence lifestyle things. We once Skyped with a class in California, and the teacher's like, they're all vegetarians. So my students were, like, eager to talk about the subsistence lifestyle, but both classes were really respectful.
Students have also shared Tlingit language through online videos. Here's Natalia Ashton.
Hello is Yake Yaksutini. Shoreline is Neech. Kelp is Geesh. And water is Heen. Thank you.
Davies taught fifth grade for most of her career, but transitioned over to sixth grade technology and science classes a couple of years ago. She says she'd love to bring more tech into her middle school science class as well.
So if we're talking in sixth grade about food webs, or Alaskan plants that we have, local plants, then maybe we can connect with schools in the interior, in the Arctic. We just talked about ocean acidification. Well, wouldn't it be great if we could talk to a class that, like, maybe where I grew up on a farm that is nowhere near the ocean, and we can share what we know with that class.
While tech is great, there's a lot to be learned from the people and places on Wrangell Island, too, Davies says, from PhD students to wildlife techs or shop experts. The whole point is to expand the world for students and bring the world back home. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. One of those creative minds is Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, Ph.D. He's co-authored a parenting guide for those who thought they no longer needed one. When Will My Grown-Up Kid Grow Up?
In When Will My Grown-Up Kid Grow Up, we have a chapter on work. We talk a lot about the way the new workplace has changed and the fact that most of the jobs that are available today, the best jobs, are jobs that require higher education or some kind of training beyond high school. And there are also jobs that are information and technology jobs. There are fewer manufacturing jobs than there used to be. So the path through the 20s tends to be a rocky one for most young people. They're trying to make their way into the job market, and they change jobs a lot. There are 7 job changes on average in the course of the 20s. And parents can be helpful in making the transition and making progress toward a good job by giving some advice from their own experience. And sometimes parents have connections that can help. So a young person might want to get a job in a similar field to the job that the parent has. The parent may have connections that they can give them. But I think there's a limit to that, too. Parents want to stay connected, but they also want to step back and then let them go on their own and make it on their own so they'll really have the accomplishment of doing it themselves when they succeed.
Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, Ph.D., co-author of When Will My Grown-Up Kid Grow Up? There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
To better serve our community by understanding its needs, the 2022 Kodiak Health and Well-Being Survey is now open to Kodiak residents age 18 and older. The survey results help healthcare and social service providers focus on what is most important to those of us who live and work on the island. It also helps attract grant funding to help improve health and social services. The survey is anonymous, takes about 10 minutes, and can be completed on a smartphone or tablet. At the end, participants can opt to enter a drawing for a cash prize of up to $500 by emailing their contact information. Look for a survey invite in this week's mail or access the survey on the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center website.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Wednesday. It is the 25th day of May, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:27. It won't set again until 10:46 tonight. That will give us 17 hours and 19 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 23 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 71 degrees, set in 1991. And our record low is 30 degrees, set in 1922 and 1977. Currently, it's 49 degrees out at the airport under overcast skies. Oh, strike that, 51 degrees. And east winds to 8 miles per hour, 74% humidity, 10 miles of visibility at the airport. Mostly sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 54. Calm winds becoming southeast to 5 this afternoon. For tonight, mostly clear skies, a low around 43, calm winds turning to the west to 5 after midnight. And for tomorrow, sunny skies, high near 60, west winds to 5, becoming completely calm. Beautiful weather for the beginning of Crab Festival. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 5:21 p.m. That will be a 1-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:53 p.m., almost midnight, of 8 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 6:04 this evening. That will be a 2-foot tide in Larsen Bay. followed by a high tide at 12:21 a.m. of 13.3 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Variable 10 today, seas to 4 feet. For Thursday, southwest 15, seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 15, seas to 3 feet in the Shelikof. The senior citizens of Kodiak's Board of Directors will be holding their regular meeting today at 1 p.m., just a little over a half hour. That's happening in the center's multipurpose room. Masks are recommended and social distancing will be required. The meeting's open to the public. For more information, call 907-486-6181. The Kodiak City Council will be having a regular council meeting tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held at the Kodiak Public Library. It's open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to tune in right here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and that link, as well as the meeting packets, are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any other questions, contact the clerk's office at 907-486-8636. Also tomorrow, the Assembly is having a special meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. Agenda items include consideration of matters in the call for the special meeting, A, discussion of litigation strategy and potential settlement regarding a disputed tax matter. They will also be having an assembly work session. On that agenda are discussion with Building Inspector Ted Hansen, uniform minor offense table discussion, the Kodiak Island Borough budget follow-up discussion, and borough clerk recruitment. The big blood drive is coming up this week. That's happening during Crab Festival, but it's going on at the Alaska Army National Guard Armory. That's happening between Thursday and next Monday. All days, it's going on between 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And if you'd like to schedule an appointment, contact Tara Cup at 907-654-9419. It's the Kodiak Public Library Association's annual Crab Fest book sale. That's happening Friday and Saturday at the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. If you'd like to donate books for the sale, you can still do so at Cost Savers and Big Al's Pizzeria. You can fill a whole grocery bag with your chosen books for only $5. Help support the KPLA. And for Friday, that goes on at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. For Saturday, it's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. On a related note, the Kodiak Public Library Association needs volunteers to help conduct their annual Crab Festival used book sale at the Kodiak Public Library. They have openings for volunteers to help set up the sale, staff the membership and payment table, and take down the sale. If you have questions, send them an email at kpla.alaska@gmail.com or call Mike at 907-486-6498.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.